Introduction to Ireland by Robert C. Newman. This is a tour of Irish history and a little bit of the geography and climate and such, and then a sketch of some of the contacts I had in a trip to Ireland for ministry in June of 1989. Ireland's history. We will divide up Ireland's history into prehistoric, before the year AD 400, early Christian, from about 400 to 800 AD, the Viking invasions from 800 to, say, 1170. We'll see why I pick that here in a moment. English rule, 1170 to 1922, and Irish freedom since 1922. So let's have a look at Ireland's history rather quickly. Prehistoric Ireland, up to about AD 400. A number of ruins have remained that are in the form of stone buildings and tombs. We see one of those right here. One of the most impressive is at Newgrange in Ireland, up near the border of Northern Ireland with Nation of Erie, independent Ireland, a burial mound from about 3000 BC, a passage grave inside a mound. The mound is some 35 feet high, nearly 300 feet across. The tunnel and inner chamber do not go, however, halfway in, but only about a quarter way in, about 75 feet from the entrance. The inner chamber is aligned in such a way as to be illuminated by the sun when it rises only on a day or two on either side of the winter solstice at December 21. So rather impressive arrangement there. Since we don't have any details by the people who made these things, we don't know exactly what it's about, but surely that whole alignment had some purpose. Here's a shot of the outside of Newgrange, which has been, the facade has been somewhat restored in modern times. Labacolly is an example of one of the biggest wedge-shaped gallery graves in Ireland. These graves were erected in many parts of Ireland during the early Bronze Age, so around 1500 BC, so much more recent than than the Newgrange passage tomb. They are particularly common in the southwest of Ireland. This tomb consists of one large and one small chamber covered by three massive capstones. So they're what we call megalithic tombs, very large stones in building the tomb. The burial chamber is surrounded by a stone cairn, flanked by further upright stones in a U formation. Excavation in 1934 produced inhumation burials, not cremations, but regular burials, and fragments of pottery, bone, and stone. So here we have Labacolly, a megalithic wedge tomb from about 1500 BC, and that's Bobby McGann, I believe, standing on top of the huge stone that forms the roof. Early Christian Ireland, AD 400 to 800. One of the places we visited was the Rock of Cashel. This was the seat of the kings of Munster, and then at one point of the High Kings of Ireland. The Rock of Cashel is a location where we know that St. Patrick was there, and one of the stone crosses actually goes back to his time, not this one, which is more recent. The Viking invasions began about AD 800, and because of the dangers to the Irish when the Vikings came in, they built defenses, and one of these were these tall stone towers. This round tower at Monasterboice is, as a sign says, the Irish reaction to the Norse raids on the monasteries in the 10th and 11th century AD. These tapering buildings over 100 feet high served as watchtowers. From the top you could see whether a a Viking ship was coming ashore and such. Belfries, place to ring out a warning for that, as well as perhaps other purpose, other church purposes. Repositories for church valuables as refuges for the country. The door, normally 15 to 20 feet above ground, was reached by a movable ladder, and the interior was divided into four more stories. Present height of the tower is 110 feet. The level of the surroundings has been raised by burials, etc. Under English rule, 1170 to 1922, Bunratty Castle, built about 1450, would be an example of a building from this period. In the 16th and 17th century, this castle was a stronghold of the O'Briens, who were initially the kings of Thomond, and later the earls under the British of Thomond. This is Charles Fort, British fort guarding Kinsale Harbor near Cork, in the southeast part of Ireland. In 1601, Spanish troops landed here to help the Irish in their revolt against England. This is Muckross House, has been used now and again in various films. A 19th century manor house, now a museum, shows you something of the perhaps the upper class English and Irish who ruled the country, rather to the detriment of the lower class Irish. Lower class were typically Roman Catholic, and the upper class and the English were Anglican. And so some rather bad feeling developed over centuries over that whole problem. This is an Irish cottage from the 19th century, what's called a byre dwelling, in which both cows and people dwelt in the same building. That, of course, is not unheard of. That was common in rural areas in Israel back in biblical times as well. And you can see stone building with with thatched roof. Irish independence came in 1922. This is an abandoned house that reminds us that there were many English killed in the rebellion and houses abandoned at that time, many of the landlords. Church of Ireland was the name of the Anglican or Episcopal Church in Ireland. And that was discredited with freedom, since that was associated again with the landlords. And this particular building in Castle Island, I believe it is, has now become a cultural center. So that was a very quick tour of Irish history, just to show you a few of the sites we saw from there without really giving you any details of history. Let's turn to Irish climate and culture. Ireland is, for one thing, near the sea, and so that makes a big difference in the climate of Ireland. The climate of Ireland is really very mild for the latitude that it's located at, quite a bit north of the United States. Anywhere in Ireland, you're no more than 40 miles from the sea. This has a significant moderating effect on the climate. So does the warm Gulf Stream. There are lots of Ireland, lots of mountains in Ireland. Here we see some of these and some more. And some more. Ireland has beautiful mountains. Typically the mountains are around the edges of Ireland, and the plains are mostly in the center of the country. Ireland has lots of lakes as well. Here's one near Muckross House. We're standing actually out in front of the side entrance, I guess, of Muckross House. Another lake. Both of those lakes were near Killarney. This one is near Cork. So Ireland has an abundance of lakes. Farms. A lot of farms in Ireland. Some farming pictures here. Farms in Ireland are mostly small, and the fields are divided up with distinctive stone or hedge field dividers, in some ways resembling Britain as well, but rather different from the U.S., where the field divisions are mostly mainly things like barbed wire fences, although tree lines will often grow up along a fence line if it remains that way long enough. Due to agricultural policies of the European Union, Irish farmers have done very well in recent years. Ireland is especially good for its grazing and therefore has lots of livestock because of its lush grass that can be found everywhere. One of my most striking memories of Ireland came years before this visit, which landed in Shannon Airport briefly because we were headed back to New York and it was snowing in New York and they had to get the runways cleared. And here we were in January coming back from Israel, and the grass was all brilliant green in Ireland. The main livestock of Ireland are sheep and goats and cattle. Now there's some cattle and some sheep. Another activity perhaps rather distinctive of Ireland and Scotland and such is peat farming. Peat is a matted turf that is on its way to forming coal, and basically it is dug up, mined, and dried in rural areas and used for fuel in the home and in industry as well. It makes a fine, sweet-smelling fire. Rural cottages. This is a typical example of a cottage in the country. This particular one near Tralee, Ireland, was renovated by a missionary couple, the Murphys, and I stayed with them for a number of days during my visit in June of 1989. Here's another cottage of a thatched sort. They are much rarer now in Ireland, but still found a number of places in more rural areas or where you're looking at preserved buildings or buildings in places to commemorate old times. This is a 19th century cottage. I showed a picture of it earlier, located at Bunratty Castle, which has sort of a typical Irish village restored out back, rather like the kind of restorations we have at several places in the U.S. Towns. Ireland has the lowest population density in Europe. It has many small towns. This particular picture is one of the streets in Castle Island in southwest Ireland, County Kerry. Another picture of Castle Island, the town square, you might say. City of Cork is the second largest in Ireland, in the Republic of Ireland, behind Dublin. At the time of these pictures, 1989, its population was only about 150,000. Here's a picture of sort of a skyline view of Cork, taken from up in the Church of Ireland Cathedral. City of Dublin. Dublin is Ireland's largest city, with over a million people. It's the capital of the Republic of Ireland. This is St. Stephen's Green, rather nice park in City of Dublin. We wouldn't usually call something like this a green with all of these trees and lake in it, but that's what they call it. This is Trinity College. Some churches and shrines. This is Shandon Cathedral, the largest Church of Ireland building in Cork. I was up in the belfry of that, and they had a little instruction booklet on how to play hymn tunes on their bells. So I knocked out one of those tunes. I don't now remember what it was. That's a Church of Ireland, and what we would perhaps call Anglican from our perspective, and located in Cork. St. Margaret's Cathedral is also in Cork, but it's the Roman Catholic Church. And you can note when you look at the terrain that St. Margaret's is built on lower ground than the Shandon Cathedral was, remnant of the, what you might say, English or Protestant domination of Ireland up until right before freedom. This is a shrine to Mary in Ballinora, near one of the places that I stayed, and another Marian shrine at Ballinspittle. She has this rather striking quotation on the front fence here, "I am the Immaculate Conception." Sounds almost like a divine claim for Mary. Well, a little section on missionaries. Met one of the days while I was there with the team from the BMW, the Biblical Missions Worldwide, team in Killarney and Tralee. From the left here, John Herrick, Brian Wagner, one of our biblical grads, Bill Doran, Kerry Buttram, and Tom Murphy, with whom I stayed a number of days. This is the Wagners in Killarney. I don't know who the fellow is on the left, but Brian Wagner and his wife, Lori, with BMW, and then Jesse Wagner, one of their daughters, some friends, John Toom and John's wife, and Jeanette Wagner, the other daughter. This is the McGann family with an evangelized fields mission in Cork. Bob McGann, his wife Karen, I think the two boys on the right, Bobby and Timmy, and then the little boy in front, Stephen, and the little girl, Ashling. Long ago, 1989, 30 years ago, so these people all have grown a great deal since that time. This was the UFM summer team, two guys as summer interns, Dan Zagoni on the left and Jonathan Tarr next to him, with Bob McGann, who was one of their supervisors, and the son Bobby, and on a trip we took up to Dublin, so this is on the way. Irish believers. Here's Richard Tobin, friend and helper of Bob McGann. He's with Bob McGann here in front of the Word Bookshop. Brendan Walsh lives in Tralee, disabled, a writer. The Moors live in Ballincollig near Cork. I stayed with them several days. He owns a computer business. His name is Tony Moore. His wife Heather and their two girls, Ruth and Lynn. Some of the places I spoke at on my trip in June 1989. The Ivy Cultural Center, former Church of Ireland. That's located in Castle Island. St. Colm's High School. Private school emphasizing Irish culture. Connolly Hall, a labor union hall located in downtown Cork. Well, which way is Ireland going to go? There are a number of pressures on Ireland here since independence has come. The evangelical missionaries have a problem of if they're viewed as Protestants, there's this very strong Protestant-Catholic struggle that had been going on for centuries. So basically, when they're asked, they say, we're Christians, and have something difficult, in fact, to overcome here, and yet there's a real need for the Irish to understand the gospel properly. And although Ireland is perhaps rather religious as Europe goes, there are still serious problems there. Here's a picture of some guys wearing heavy metal jackets that I saw in Cork. And yet here, I don't know who put this up, but a rather large scripture sign on the side of a wall, which says, Jesus said, what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Which way will Ireland go? Here's a perhaps typical road sign, not far outside Cork, but showing you where the various locations are nearby, and with the names of the various places in both the Irish Gaelic and in English. That's the end of our brief talk about Ireland, to give you a little idea of what sort of things are going on there. And the encouragement as believers that we should pray for Ireland.